The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, this is John Ivey for the North Carolina Reading Service, and this is Sports Illustrated for Kids. For the next half hour, I'll be reading to you from the 2023 issue, March-April issue of Sports Illustrated for Kids. And we're going to go to who's who in sports, and we're going to go to our third line. And we have Sandy Alcantara, Miami Marlins pitcher. His height is 6'5". His weight is 200 pounds. He was born September 7th, 1995, hometown Ottawa, Dominican Republic. Following a season in which he went 14-9 with a 2.28 ERA, Alcantara was named the National League Cy Young Award winner in a unanimous vote. He led the National League in WAR 8.0. In innings pitched, as he made the All-Star team for the second time in his career. Alcantara had 6 complete games, more than any team. Did you know Alcantara became the third Cy Young winner from the Dominican Republic after Pedro Martinez, who won 3 times, and Bartolo Colon? Next, we have Brianna Jones, Connecticut Sun center. Her height is 6'3". She was born December 18, 1995, in her hometown, Havre de Grace, Maryland. Following a season in which she averaged 13.8 points per game and helped the Sun to the WNBA Finals, Jones was named Sixth Woman of the Year. In 2021, she was the league's most improved player. Jones played college basketball at Maryland, where she twice led the nation in field goal percentage. The Sun, who began play as the Orlando Miracle in 1999, are currently one of 3 WNBA teams not to share a market with an NBA franchise. And finally, we have Erin Mattson, North Carolina Tar Heels forward. Her height is 5'4". She was born March 17, 2000, hometown, Shadas Ford, Pennsylvania. In her 5-year career, Mattson led the Tar Heels to 5 Atlantic Coast Conference championships and 4 national titles, including in 2022, she scored 28 goals and had 10 assists in 21 games. She was a 5-time ACC Offensive Player of the Year and has been named a member of the United States national team since age 17. Did you know, though, 2 months after the NCAA tournament, Mattson was named UNC's coach, replacing Carson Shelton, who retired after 42 seasons. Woulda, coulda, shoulda. How long until this Clara team botched a draft? We look back at the last 5. Top pick regret, 100%. Baker Mayfield's Browns career started out pretty well, but went off the rails in year 4. It's never a good sign when a team trades 3 future first-round picks to replace a former first-round pick. Best player not in the first round. Fred Warner, 70. Pre-draft scouting reports not his tackling ability, but the 49ers' third-rounder has never had fewer than 118 stops in 5 NFL seasons. Franchise defined. Buffalo. Scoring Josh Allen would have been enough, but the Bills hit twice in the first round with 2-time Pro Bowl linebacker Tremaine Edmonds. They also identified a future starter at cornerback in the 4th round in Teron Johnson. Wants a do-over, Arizona. Obviously, the Cardinals took a do-over on Josh Rosen when they drafted Kyler Murray the next year. You can read more about the saga in this issue's hot take on page 9. But Arizona didn't just whiff at QB. Not one other of their 6 picks is still in the Grand Canyon State. Christian Kirk, a bright spot from their class, blossomed last year with the Jaguars. 2019, top pick, regret, 10%. Last season created a sliver of doubt about Kyler Murray. Best player, Nick Bosa, number 2, 43 sacks in 53 games. Best player not in the first round, Max Crosby, drafted 106. Teams chase edge guys in every draft, but the Raiders found a tenacious rusher in round four. Franchise defined, Titans. Tennessee got incredible value on Jeffrey Simmons, drafted number 19, and A.J. Brown, drafted 51, see next page. Six-rounder David Long had developed into a starter on defense. Wants a do-over, Patriots. New England had 10 picks in this draft, but they struggled to find any impact players. The most notable selection was punter Jake Bailey. He was drafted 163rd. 2020, top pick regret percent. The Bengals landed a possible future GOAT, which means greatest of all time. Best player, Joe Burrow, drafted number 1. See above analysis. Best player not in the first round, Jonathan Taylor, drafted number 41. Running backs used to go frequently in the first round. Those days are over. The Colts halfback, however, could have been a top 5 pick. Franchise defined, Cowboys. Redo the entire 2020 draft, and there are two Cowboys probably going early. Wide receiver CeeDee Lamb, number 17 above on the left, and cornerback Trayvon Diggs, drafted number 51 above on right. Wants a do-over, Commanders. After a stellar rookie year, Chase Young has struggled to stay on the field. If ever a draft should have had back-to-back quarterback in the first two picks, it was this one. 2021, top pick, 2%. Trevor Lawrence silenced most of the doubters this season when he led the Jags to the playoffs. Best player, Micah Parsons, drafted number 12. Lawrence may be a Hall of Famer in a decade. Micah Parsons may be there in a couple of years. Best player not in the first round, Amon-Ra St. Brown, drafted 112. Scouts concerned about the Lions wide receiver seem overblown now. Franchise defined, Lions. Detroit got St. Brown along with their starting N.T. Alim, McNeil, and right tackle Penny Sewell. The Jags also deserve credit for finding their guys at quarterback and running back. Wants a do-over, Jets. We've given Zach Wilson enough grief in this magazine. Turn to page 9 if you want to relive it. 2022, top pick, 40%. It's too soon to call, but Jags offensive linebacker Trayvon Walker wasn't Roy. He's more of a project player. Best player, Sauce Gardner, drafted number 4. See, Jets fans, it's not all bad. He led the league with 20 passes defended. Best player not in the first round, Brock Purdy, drafted 262. Kind of a no-brainer given how quickly Mr. Irrelevant made himself, well, relevant. Franchise defined, Jets. They took the AP defensive Gardner and offensive Garrett Wilson rookies of the year in the span of 7 picks. Wants a do-over, the Titans. It's not so much whom they took in the first round, but how. They traded A.J. Brown for the number 18 pick. After Brown torched them in Philly, and Titans fired their general manager. Who you got? Questions about going into the 2023 Major League Baseball series. We're here to issue rulings on hitters, hair, and hot dogs, as well as dissect the game's new rules. Best hitter, Ted Williams or Barry Bonds? We're not worked up about Bonds' alleged steroid use. He was the most proficient player ever at helping his team score runs. But a bunch of intentional walks is kind of boring. We're taking Ted Williams and his 406 average in the 1941 over Bonds' 609 OBB in 2004, barely. Fenway or Wrigley? We're choosing Fenway. Ice cream cone or helmet? We're going cone. Yeah, the helmet is cool, and you can take it home. But then, what do you do with it? Put it on the shelf? It doesn't get a lot of repeat use as a bowl. The beauty of the cone is that it's edible, too. The helmet can be eaten only if you're really, really determined. Sharp, snap judgment, marvel, or D.C.? We're a magazine. We love star power. Despite the runaway success of the MCU, DC has always had the bigger stars. Batman, Superman, Wonder Woman. DC's time has come. The Marvel movies are running out of characters and steam, and in the interest of full disclosure, this publication is made by people in their early 30s. We grew up with Batman, the animated series, and the death of Superman. Like any self-respecting 90s kids, though, we do love the X-Men. Snap judgment. Is a hot dog a sandwich? It comes between bread. So yeah, why not? Who cares? Stay off Twitter. This is the kind of stuff that gets discussed. ROTY, Corbin, or Gunnar? Arizona outfielder Corbin Carroll and Baltimore infielder Gunnar Henderson are the top prospects in baseball and the favorites to win Rookie of the Year in their respective leagues. Unless the Diamondbacks and Orioles shock everyone and meet in the World Series, these two players aren't really in competition. It'd be easy to root for them both, but this isn't that kind of issue. We're making judgments here. So, for absolutely no reason other than we can, it's time to pick a fave phenom. High on-base percentage and solid third-base defense are rare and valuable, but we want to see diving outfield catches and stolen bases. So we've got the guy with StarCast highest sprint speed last season, Carroll. Best mustache, Raleigh Fingers or Dennis Eckersley? Looks like they're going with Raleigh Fingers. Congrats. Changes. Bases bigger. The bases have gotten 3 inches bigger this season, going from a 15-inch square to an 18-inch square. What does that matter? Well, it doesn't make a huge difference, but Major League Baseball hopes it makes a few positive small changes. Firstly, it gives base runners a head start, not a big one, but in Major League Baseball's bang-bang base-stealing plays, a few inches can make all the difference. More importantly, it gives fielders and runners more room between each other to avoid collisions. It also fixes one of the most annoying consequences of replay. It'll be harder for otherwise safe runners to be tagged out when they overslide a base and the fielder keeps the tag on them. Picks off. Base dealers aren't just happy about bigger bases. They're also getting some relief from relentless, boring throws over to first. Boo! Now pitchers can only disengage twice per plate appearance. Disengagements include pickoff throws, fake throws, mound conferences, and just stepping off the rubber. The penalty for a third disengagement is a balk. Who benefits? Bigger bases and fewer pickoffs should help base dealers like Oakland's Eschuer Ruiz and frustrate pitchers like Zach Galen, who throw over constantly to control the run game. Hip to be square. You might not even be able to tell the base has changed. The shape is the same. Shifts limited. Not since steroids has a debate rocked baseball like that over the infield shift. Three players on one side of the diamond. A brilliant evolution of defensive tactics or an obviously unintended cheat. Well, debate over. Major League Baseball got rid of it. Kind of. Two players have to stay on each side of the infield at all times, which should mean more hits, especially for lefties. Who benefits? Texas's Corey Seager hit just .245 last year as a constant target of shifts. Meanwhile, Houston's Framber Valdez won't be able to rely as much on pull side grounders. Over the line, infielders can still take away the hit up the middle as long as they're on their side of the mound. Pitch clock intenser. Baseball's charm has a lot to do with its pace. You may disagree. The fact that nothing was timed set baseball apart from virtually every other sport. Well, those days are over. Pitchers now have 15 seconds to begin the delivery, or 20 seconds with men on base. This rule was a hit in the minors last year, where it sped up games. Who benefits? The losers of this rule are obviously the pitchers, especially finicky relievers like Boston's Kenley Jansen or St. Louis's Giovanni Gallegos, who take forever between pitches. These guys, who have been known to take over 30 seconds to get set, could be more easily rattled. The winners, some hitters, but all fans, especially those of you with bedtimes. Top five. Number one, New York Yankees. When the Yankees were racking up World Series titles in the late 1990s and early 2000s, they acquired the moniker the Evil Empire because their free spending habits allowed them to field a juggernaut every year. Then they slowed their spending and stopped winning. Now it looks like any reservations they had about splashing cash have gone out the door. In the offseason, New York pointed up to a $360 million to sign Aaron Judge for 9 seasons. The Bronx Bombers also bolstered their pitching staff by giving former Giants ace Carlos Rodon $162 million for 6 years. So a team that won 99 games and scored the most runs in the league while allowing the second fewest is back and better than ever. Bottom line, this could be the year evil comes back in style. New ace in town. Rodon led the National League with 12.0 strikeouts per 9 innings last year when he had a 2.88 ERA. Snap judgment. Exclusive versus inclusive playoffs. For nearly 70 years, one team per league made it to the postseason, and there was one series, the World Series. Now there are a dozen teams and 4 rounds of playoffs. Last year, Philadelphia finished 3rd in its division and made it to the World Series. It was a fun, dramatic run, but it raises the question, what's the point of the season? We're really playing 162 games for seeding purposes. Of course, Major League Baseball is never going to back to the old days. More postseason games means more cash. But may we suggest paring back the field to 4 teams and eliminating the wild card round, but making all series best of 7, it will place more emphasis on the season and will no longer have to watch teams celebrate wildly on the field after winning a 2-game wild card series. Number 2, Houston Astros. The Astros are in the midst of an absurdly dominant period. Over the past 5 full seasons, they've won at least 100 games 4 times. They've done so with dominant pitching, and Houston will be as good as usual on the hill this year, even with the loss of Cy Young Award winner Justin Verlander. He signed with the Mets as a free agent. But the Astros can also mash the ball, especially when it matters. Last year in the playoffs, Yordan Alvarez hit 3 homers to put Houston in the lead in the 6th inning or later, something no one had ever done more than once in a postseason. He'll be joined in the lineup by new addition Jose Abreu, owner of a career 506 slugging percentage. Look out. Number 3, Seattle Mariners. Few teams have had more iconic players than the Mariners, who have trotted out Ken Griffey Jr., Ichiro, A-Rod, and Randy Johnson. Add to that list center fielder Julio Rodriguez, a bubbly 22-year-old who was the runaway rookie of the year last season. However, the Mariners, have never been able to get that star power to translate into a World Series appearance, let alone a title. Seattle is clearly going all in on J-Rod, giving him an extension that could be worth up to $470 million, and the Mariners also added another all-star outfielder, Teoscar Hernandez, who hit 25 homers for Toronto last year. The night might be Seattle's year, but the M's time is coming, and it could be soon. Tampa Bay Rays. They rarely look scary on paper, but as we all know, games are played on grass and fake grass, but not on paper. Tampa Bay made the playoffs for the 4th straight season last year, despite an offense that ranked 11th in the American League in runs, scored, and 13th in OPS. The pitching staff is filled with hard throwers, led by Shane McClanahan, who had a 2.54 ERA in his 2nd big league season. The Rays didn't add much in the offseason. though they did lock up a few key players. But given how well this organization squeezes talent out of its players, the lack of new talent probably won't matter. Bet on that playoff streak growing. Cleveland Browns. In a day and an age when it seems as if every bat ends with a home run or a strikeout, the Guardians are a breath of fresh air. They hit a measly 127 homers last year, and 29 of those came from one guy, Jose Ramirez. They also had the Major's lowest strikeout rate in 5 years. Cleveland small-balled its way to 92 wins and a victory in the Wild Card Series. It also helped that the Guardians had terrific starting pitching, led by Shane Bieber. The 2020 Cy Young Award winner saw his strikeout total and velocity drop, but he was still crafty enough to win 13 games with a 2.88 ERA. Throw in Tristan McKenzie, 2.96 ERA, and Cal McQuantrill, 3.338, and you can see why we're believers in this team. Top five, snap judgment, technology versus the human element. The Mets, number one. Can anything slow down Justin Verlander? Injuries? Nope. He missed almost two entire seasons with Tommy John surgery, then bounced back last year with an 18-4 record and a 1.75 ERA for the Astros. Age? Nah. He did all that at 39. He was understandably in demand in the offseason and wound up signing with the Mets for 2 years and $86 million. Guy likes sixes, apparently. He'll bolster what was already one of the largest better rotations. While the acquisition of a new player of Verlander's caliber was huge, the Mets also made several key moves in the offseason just by re-signing existing talent. The most significant players remained were closer Edwin Diaz, who averaged nearly two strikeouts per inning, and outfielder Brandon Nimmo, a 100-win team a year ago. New York was able to add without significant losses. The Mets welcomed Verlander, whose Cy Young win in 2022 was the third of his career. And back to snap judgment, technology versus the human element. Strike three. Also, death to humans. The robots are coming. It's just a matter of time. This season, pitches at all AAA games will be called by automatic technology. The ump will still get to signal the pitch. This is bad for a number of reasons, not the least of which is, what if the robots become self-aware and rise up? Technology has been encroaching on umps for years. Replay challenges, which tend to be interminable and not always right, are reviewed remotely. If balls and strikes are going to be called by technology, it's only a matter of time before calls on the bases are as well. A few years ago, umpire Jim Joyce blew a call that cost a pitcher a perfect game. It wasn't the end of the world. It was a reminder that the game is played by humans and that all humans make mistakes. Atlanta Braves, number two. No franchise in recent history has turned out as many amazing starting pitchers as the Braves. Last year, Max Fried finished second in Cy Young voting, and Kyle Wright won a league-best 21 games. The next hurdler to become a star could be Spencer Strider. That's assuming he's not already considered one. He averaged 13.8 strikeouts per nine innings last year, his first full season in the bigs. And if you're worried that the Braves turn out only pitchers, consider this. Strider finished second in Rookie of the Year voting. The winner was his teammate, Michael Harris, too, who had 297 with power. All that youth might mean Atlanta is a year or two from its peak. But what a peak it could be. San Diego Padres, number three. Well, the Dodgers opted to not make any massive moves. The team that knocked them out of the playoffs didn't just double down on its commitment to winning. It quintupled down. San Diego gave a huge contract to free agent shortstop Xander Bogaerts, who becomes the fifth natural shortstop on the roster. Who play where? Who knows? But it's a good problem for manager Bob Melvin to have. Since they're all great hitters, the glut of infielders likely means Fernando Tatis Jr. will move to the outfield when he returns from his PED suspension. In April, he'll have something to prove, which could make the already scary Padres lineup even more frightening. Number four, St. Louis Cardinals. How does a team whose top three starters go to a combined 31-32 with 3.74 ERA with 93 games and make the playoffs? By doing everything else well. Only two teams were in the top five in the majors in offensive and defensive war, the Yankees and the Cardinals. St. Louis lost one of the best defensive players in history when catcher Yadier Molina retired. But the Cards replaced him with free agent Wilson Contreras, who is one of the better all-around backstops in the game. Whether St. Louis can win a second straight Central crown would come down to whether Paul Goldschmidt can continue to produce at age 36. Last year he had a WAR of 7.8 and OPS of 180 as he won the National League MVP award. Los Angeles Dodgers, number five. Los Angeles had an interesting offseason. The Dodgers let shortstop Trey Turner and third baseman Justin Turner leave in free agency, sparking theories that they are trying to free up money to make a run at Shohei Ohtani next year. While those losses will hurt, L.A. has a deep farm system, and let's not forget this is a team that won 111 games last year, the fourth most in history. That's a lot of wins. An early playoff loss took much of the luster off the season, but the fact remains that this is a team with a lot of resources that has won its division in 9 of the last 10 years. Some things you can set your watch to. Lefty Clayton Kershaw will be hard to hit, and the Dodgers will be the team everyone is chasing in the National League West. We've run out of time for today's episode of Sports Illustrated for Kids. Be sure to listen next time. We hope you've enjoyed it. I'm John Ivey, reading for the North Carolina Reading Service. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Sports Illustrated for Kids is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. If you have any comments or questions, please call 919-832-5138. That number again, 919-832-5138. 832-5138. Thank you for listening to the North Carolina Reading Service.